This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of wrist ligaments and biomechanics from the hand section on orthobullets.com. In this episode, we'll go over the wrist planes of motion, wrist biomechanics, carpal relationships, wrist ligaments, extrinsic ligaments, and intrinsic or interosseous ligaments. So starting with the wrist planes of motion, the joints involved are the radial carpal and the intercarpal joints. There are three axes of motion: flexion extension, radial ulnar deviation, and pronosupination. As far as normal and functional motion at the wrist, in flexion, 65 degrees is normal and 10 degrees is functional. And keep in mind, 40% of wrist flexion comes from the radial carpal joint and 60% comes from the midcarpal joint. In extension, 55 degrees is normal and 35 degrees is functional. And remember that 66% of wrist extension comes from the radial carpal joint and 33% comes from the midcarpal joint. As far as radial deviation, 15 degrees is normal and 10 degrees is functional. And keep in mind that 90% of radial deviation at the wrist comes from the midcarpal joint. Finally, as far as ulnar deviation, 35 degrees is normal and 15 degrees is functional. And remember that 50% of ulnar deviation comes from the radial carpal joint and 50% comes from the midcarpal joint. Moving on to wrist biomechanics, there are three biomechanic concepts that have been proposed: the link concept, the column concept, and the rose concept. The link concept suggests that there are three links in a chain composed of the radius, lunate, and capitate. The head of the capitate acts as the center of rotation. The proximal row, which includes the lunate, acts as a unit and is an intercalated segment with no direct tendon attachments. And finally, the link concept suggests that the distal row functions as a unit. The advantage of the link concept is efficient motion, specifically less motion at each link. Another advantage is strong volar ligaments that enhance stability. As far as disadvantages, more links increases instability of the chain. And remember that the scaphoid bridges both carpal rows, and this may cause resting forces / radial deviation that push the scaphoid into flexion and push the triquetrum into extension. And ulnar deviation pushes the scaphoid into extension. Moving on to the column concept, this suggests that there is a lateral or mobile column, a central or flexion extension column, and a medial or rotation column. The lateral or mobile column comprises the scaphoid, trapezoid, and trapezium. The scaphoid is the center of motion and function is mobile. The central or flexion extension column comprises the lunate, the capitate, and hamate. The lunocapitate articulation is the center of motion, and motion is flexion / extension. Finally, the medial or rotation column comprises the triquetrum and distal carpal row, and motion is rotation. Finally, in the rose concept, this comprises the proximal and distal rows, where the scaphoid is a bridge between rows, and motion occurs within and between rows. Now let's talk about some carpal relationships, specifically carpal collapse, ulnar translation, and load transfer. With respect to carpal collapse, the normal ratio of the carpal height to the third metacarpal height is 0.54. With respect to ulnar translation, the normal ratio of ulna to capitate length to the third metacarpal height is 0.30. Finally, with respect to load transfer, the distal radius bears 80% of the load, while the distal ulna bears 20% of the load. And remember that ulna load bearing increases with ulnar lengthening, and ulna load bearing decreases with ulnar shortening. So again, ulna load bearing increases with ulnar lengthening, and ulna load bearing decreases with ulnar shortening. Moving on to the wrist ligaments, the ligaments of the wrist include extrinsic ligaments and intrinsic ligaments. The extrinsic ligaments bridge carpal bones to the radius or metacarpals and include the volar and dorsal ligaments. Intrinsic ligaments originate and insert on the carpal bones. The most important intrinsic ligaments are the scapholunate interosseous ligament and lunotriquetral interosseous ligament. As far as characteristics of the wrist ligaments, the volar ligaments are secondary stabilizers of the scaphoid. And remember that the volar ligaments are stronger than the dorsal ligaments. Finally, keep in mind that the dorsal ligaments converge on the triquetrum. The space of Poirier is a center of a double V-shaped convergence of ligaments. This represents the central weak area of the wrist in the floor of the carpal tunnel at the level of the proximal capitate. Again, the space of Poirier is the central weak area of the wrist in the floor of the carpal tunnel at the level of the proximal capitate. It is also found between the volar radioscaphocapitate ligament and volar long radiolunate ligament, otherwise known as the radiolunotriquetral ligament. With respect to the space of Poirier, in the setting of wrist palmar flexion, the area of weakness disappears, and in wrist dorsiflexion, the area of weakness increases. In perilunate dislocations, the space of Poirier allows the distal carpal row to separate from the lunate, and in lunate dislocations, the lunate escapes into this space. Moving on to extrinsic ligaments, the ones to know include the volar radiocarpal ligaments, the volar ulnocarpal ligaments, and the dorsal ligaments. The volar radiocarpal ligaments include the radial collateral, radioscaphocapitate, long radiolunate, radioscapholunate, and the short radiolunate. The radioscaphocapitate ligament is at risk for injury with an excessively large radial styloid. The radioscaphocapitate ligament starts from the radial styloid to the capitate, creating a sling to support the waist of the scaphoid. Make sure to preserve this ligament when doing a proximal row carpectomy, as it acts as a primary stabilizer of the wrist after a proximal row carpectomy and prevents ulnar drift. The long radiolunate ligament is also called the radiolunotriquetral or volar radiolunate ligament. It counteracts the ulnar distal translocation of the lunate. And keep in mind that the long radiolunate ligament is abnormal in a Madelung's deformity. The radioscapholunate ligament is also known as the ligament of Testut and Quince. It only functions as a neurovascular conduit. It is not a true ligament and does not add mechanical strength. Finally, the short radiolunate ligament functions to stabilize the lunate. Examples of volar ulnocarpal ligaments include the ulnotriquetral ligament, the ulnolunate ligament, and the ulnocapitate ligament. The dorsal ligaments include the radiotriquetral ligament, the dorsal intercarpal ligament, the radiolunate ligament, and the radioscaphoid ligament. The radiotriquetral ligament must also be disrupted for a Vesey deformity to form, that is, in combination with rupture of the lunotriquetral interosseous ligament. Finally, moving on to intrinsic or interosseous ligaments, the ones to know are in the proximal row, the distal row, and in the palmar midcarpal region. So proximal row intrinsic or interosseous ligaments include the scapholunate ligament and the lunotriquetral ligament. The scapholunate ligament is the primary stabilizer of the scapholunate joint. It is composed of three components: the dorsal portion, the volar portion, and the proximal portion. The dorsal portion of the scapholunate ligament is the thickest and strongest, and it prevents translation. The volar portion of the scapholunate ligament prevents rotation, and the proximal portion has no significant strength. Disruption of the scapholunate ligament leads to lunate extension when the scaphoid flexes, creating a Deasy deformity. The lunotriquetral ligament is composed of three components: dorsal, volar, and proximal. Disruption of the lunotriquetral ligament leads to lunate flexion when the scaphoid is normally aligned. This creates a Vesey deformity in combination with rupture of the dorsal radiotriquetral ligament. Distal row intrinsic or interosseous ligaments include the trapezio-trapezoid ligament, the trapezio-capitate ligament, and the capito-hamate ligament. Finally, the palmar midcarpal ligaments include the scapho-trapezio-trapezoid ligament, the scapho-capitate ligament, the triquetral-capitate ligament, and the triquetral-hamate ligament. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over two quick questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 27-year-old motorcyclist is thrown from his vehicle and sustains an open radiocarpal dislocation. The injury is reduced in the emergency room and a post-reduction radiograph shows ulnar translation of the carpus. The lunate is now centered over the distal ulna instead of over the lunate fossa of the radius. The main volar extrinsic ligament that must be disrupted to cause this appearance is the, and the choices are 1, short radiolunate ligament, 2, scapholunate interosseous ligament, 3, radiotriquetral ligament, 4, radioscaphocapitate ligament, and 5, radioscapholunate ligament. The correct answer to this question is 4, radioscaphocapitate ligament. So the stout radioscaphoid capitate ligament is the main restraint against ulnar translation of the carpus. On a posteroanterior radiograph, carpal alignment is evaluated using the lunate position relative to the radius. The lunate should align with the ulnar column of the distal radius with a minimum of 2/3 of the lunate articulating with the radius. Radiocarpal fracture dislocations can be classified based on the presence of associated intercarpal dissociation, which is seen in the Monheim classification, or the extent of radial styloid involvement, which is described in the Dumontier classification. Ilias et al. Reviewed radiocarpal fracture dislocations. They advised suspecting a scapholunate injury when the radial styloid fracture exits at the junction between the scaphoid and lunate fossa. They enumerate the steps for surgical treatment as 1. Provisional reduction, 2. Neurovascular decompression, 3. Joint debridement, 4. Treatment of intercarpal injuries, and 5. Fracture fixation and or soft tissue repair. Mudgal et al. Retrospectively reviewed 12 patients with radiocarpal fracture dislocations. Open injuries and Monheim type 2 injuries result in inferior outcomes compared with closed and type 1 injuries. They opine that anatomical repair and stable fixation will lead to a satisfactory outcome in these injuries. And moving on to the final question, a 35-year-old woman who sustained an isolated left injury after a fall onto an outstretched hand has significant gapping between the scaphoid and lunate articulation on AP and lateral radiographs of the left hand. She has been complaining of left dorsal wrist pain since the fall. Examination reveals a positive Watson scaphoid shift test. What ligamentous structure is an important secondary stabilizer to prevent dorsal intercalated segment instability or a DZ deformity in this patient? And the choices are 1. Transverse carpal ligament, 2. Dorsal intercarpal ligaments, 3. Triangular fibrocartilage complex, 4. Dorsal lunotriquetral ligament, and 5. Volar lunotriquetral ligament. The correct answer to this question is 2. Dorsal intercarpal ligaments. So the integrity of the dorsal intercarpal ligaments is important in preventing dorsal intercalated segment instability or a DZ deformity and persistent scapholunate instability. To quickly review, scapholunate instability is the most common carpal instability. The primary stabilizing structure of the scaphoid and lunate bones is the scapholunate ligament, which is commonly injured with a fall onto an outstretched hand. Secondary stabilizers of the scaphoid and lunate include the dorsal intercarpal ligaments and the dorsal radiocarpal ligaments. Failure to recognize injury of these structures can cause persistent dorsal intercalated segment instability, or DZ. This can predispose patients to a slack wrist and early wrist osteoarthritis. Mitsuyasu et al. Examined the role of dorsal intercarpal ligaments in scapholunate instability. They showed that the dorsal intercarpal ligaments had an important role in stabilizing the scaphoid and lunate bones with static and dynamic movements. The authors of this study suggest that dorsal intercarpal ligaments should be assessed intraoperatively and consideration should be given to repair and/or reconstruction with surgical management of scapholunate ligament tears. Viegas et al. Showed that the dorsal intercarpal and dorsal radiocarpal ligaments form a lateral V configuration over the dorsal wrist. This configuration acts as an indirect dorsal stabilizing effect on the scaphoid throughout the range of motion of the wrist. Their integrity acts to ensure normal wrist kinematics. That's all for this review about wrist ligaments and biomechanics. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.